take a little risk. Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this. Ha!
Welcome, everyone. Episode 77 of the Matt Jones Podcast. The eighth since we started back in the since we started back after the break, and I'm now joined with one of my good friends and probably the expert on college football, certainly in the South, but maybe in America, Paul Feinbaum. Paul, how are you doing?
Matt, I'm doing great, and I appreciate the invitation. I've done a lot of podcasts in my time, but never one that has a reputation of this one.
See, that's, there you go. I mean, I don't even know what that means, but it can mean whatever you want, you know?
Well, usually the line is you're introduced at some quarterback club in Nowheresville, Alabama, and you say, well, you know, thanks for the introduction. It's not the best. It's certainly, it may not be the best introduction I've ever had, but it's the most recent.
Well, you know, that's a very Alabama phenomenon, like quarterback clubs. Like, we don't have that in Kentucky. How many of those exist where people just get together and talk about football?
Oh, it's amazing. When I was, you know, starting out, I mean, it was a big deal to get to go to one to speak, because, I mean, they would pay you $250 or something. And, you know, but, you know, depending on where you went, and I, you know, you could go into Selma, Alabama, or Gadsden, Alabama. And early in my career, Matt, it was like you going over to Mitch McConnell's house without an invitation.
Well, people, you know, now you're like Mr. Beloved SEC Network guy, but there was a time when you started doing radio, you were a really controversial figure in Alabama, weren't you?
Yeah, as a reporter, I did some pretty controversial things about Paul Bryant before his last year before he retired, and then I became a columnist because the newspaper literally decided they couldn't afford any more libel suits, so they'd hide behind Times versus Sullivan, and I was hated pretty badly, death threats galore, and taking on the establishment, and it was a fairly rough beginning. I don't regret it. It definitely conditioned me for everything that would follow. But yeah, if you go back 30, 35 years in Alabama, I was not the good old boy that I am now.
Well, I've said this many times. I sort of based the Kentucky sports radio side completely on yours. I mean, I watched what you did there in terms of taking – stations and putting them everywhere and focusing on something people were really interested in and creating this community. The difference between me and you is I kind of root for my team, whereas you were, I don't want to say neutral, but you were more sort of unbiased. But the idea of creating this network, are you surprised, Paul, that there aren't more people that have done it? I mean, I'm sure there are some that I don't know, but it seems like in places like Alabama and Kentucky, shouldn't everybody do this? I mean, or is there no one else like Alabama and Kentucky?
Well, I think in fairness, a lot of people have tried it. And you know this, having been very successful, it's just not the easiest thing to do. And, you know, it does take a lot of perseverance. It takes being there a lot. And I think in the end, radio has shrunk, while other mediums have expanded, such as podcasting. And I think while a lot of people have tried it, it's just a very difficult thing to do. I mean, even our program, we had a hard time expanding. It took a long time to do it. You're still dealing with radio companies, Matt, that we both know and love, and they're difficult. I do think, it's unique, though. I mean, in Birmingham, there used to be a bunch of sports stations. Now there's essentially one that matters, and you know the drill in Kentucky as well. But usually fans just start gravitating to one or two, and that's it.
You know, radio to me, you tell me if you disagree. I mean, I consider podcasts a form of radio. You just don't have to take commercials. But radio to me is the hardest medium. Like, to me, you have to have the most talent to do that, which is weird to folks. But television, it's a different skill set. Like, you can be good on television and not good on radio and vice versa. But, like, radio to me is harder. but it's also more intimate with the listener. I think people know you better if you do radio. You've now done a bunch of both. What do you think?
I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, I've done it all, and you know, started as a newspaper reporter, as you know, and I think in some ways radio is the most challenging because you are out there on an island, whether for 2 hours or 3 hours, or in our case, 4 hours. And there are some pretty bad days in radio where, I mean, forget where we are today. I mean, you go back 10 years, just pick a spot in the middle of June, and there may not be anything going on, depending on where you live. In Kentucky, that's a pretty active month. In Alabama, it's not. And you start throwing out topics, and you literally start to wonder, is there one person listening? and I've been there before, and you know, there are a lot of tricks to that. But yeah, I think you have to be conversant on a lot of topics. I think you have to be willing to listen. And I'm different than a lot of radio hosts, as you know. I don't come on like Cowherd or others. You know, with a lot of compelling takes. So I admire those guys who do, but I don't. I've always been one that wants to listen to what people have to say, and I get a lot of criticism for that. There's more to it than just turning on the switch, but I really do enjoy the conversation with fans.
Yeah, you do 4 hours, and having hosted that a number of times, 4 hours is a long time, and it's especially a long time. I mean, you mentioned June, July. That's usually when you all would have me host, and there was oftentimes there was nothing going on, and you just try to do the best you can. But 4 hours is a long time, Paul, and you're doing it multiple day, every day of the week. I mean, do you ever just sort of come back from break and like, all right, I don't know what to say, and you just sort of go – and you also do it by yourself. I hate doing radio by myself. At some point, at 20 hours a week, are you ever just like, all right, I've said all there is to say?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of days, especially lately, where, you know, now that I'm working from home, I mean, I will literally walk out in the hallway and start to talk to yourself and say, calm down, don't lose your cool, because, I mean, there are pretty volatile conversations going on. And, you know, you have to be in check because I'm usually most vulnerable early in the show. I don't know why. I just tend to get crankier. Usually it's the opposite. It's just like kind of, you kind of get into a rhythm and television does that to you though. Radio, I did for about 8 or 9 weeks during the pandemic, we did radio on television and I loved it. I mean, I just kicked back and was more relaxed than I've been. But once you get in front of a camera and lights and the producers in your ear, Matt, as you well know, it does change your disposition a little bit.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the show you've been doing for the last 3 months. You know, I sort of, with the KSR audience, folks know I'm going to talk about whatever happens. Like, I'm going to talk about, you know, news, politics. I'm just going to. And some people don't like that, but I've already sort of established that's what I do. But you're in a different situation. You've got the SEC. You can't do that as much. How have you navigated these 3 months when there are heavy topics where people have passionate views, even in the last 2 weeks? How do you navigate that and still sort of keep it as close to sports as the bosses probably want you to?
Yeah, I would say the first 2 weeks of this, you know, going back to when the SEC and the NCAA tournaments were canceled, that were some of the most difficult times I've ever had, because I felt like I knew where I wanted to take the show. I felt like we had to follow the news. We had to follow the uncertainty. But being on a sports channel, ESPN, you were getting, you know, there was some, well, are you sure this is where you want to go? Don't you think we ought to sit around and do model brackets? And I said, no, I really don't. I mean, things were so bad early on. I mean, you had to wonder whether the world was coming to an end. So I finally got buy-in primarily from our crew, who were mainly television producers and suddenly doing a radio show. And secondly, the audience. The audience didn't, you know, they wanted to come in and talk about, coronavirus is, the common cold and, I'll do what I want. And finally, I just kind of let that take off. I, I, I had an old editor, my first editor in the newspaper business, called me about a week into it. And he says, you want to hear, would you like some advice from your old boss? I said, yeah. He said, first of all, quit being so cranky. whatever's going on, just remember you're the host of a show and the audience depends on you, and keep politics out of it. And I used that for quite a while, Matt. And I tried to, if somebody wanted to go off on some tangent that he had seen on some website, that this was all a hoax, and it was that Bill Gates was propagating it. Fine, let him talk. If you wanted to go the other route, fine. And then finally that changed. And then it became, is college football going to happen? And most every guest started doing that. We started getting commissioners on and coaches on. And we had really the first 4 or 5 weeks, we had some amazing guests, including Cal came on and just let it rip. We did the same thing you do every day. You talked about what people are going through. And then the last 2 weeks have been unlike anything I've ever experienced, in the aftermath of the George Floyd murder. It's like COVID never existed, and we are back on the front line of a conversation that I've had many times, but has never seemed as serious.
It's interesting. I take up for your audience with folks sometimes, having hosted, a dozen times. Everybody kind of thinks that you guys just have a bunch of people that are just crackpots yelling and screaming. But I've had one day I sat in your chair, and an hour before I sat down, the story about the assistant coach at Ohio State and the domestic violence thing came out an hour before, and I had to navigate that for 4 hours. And I found your audience unbelievably able to do that and not say dumb things. I was worried it was going to go completely off the rails, and I really gained like a new respect for your audience then. I'm sure you've had those moments too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And some of that in, I say this as gracefully as I can. I mean, there are days when there are a lot of people out there. Television will do that. You never know who's going to accidentally bump into the SEC, but radio in particular. I mean, there's so many vehicles to hear us on, but the biggest being not only ESPN, but SiriusXM. So, yeah, I mean, we get a lot of people that they just happen. We're right next to the ESPN channel on the Sirius dial. So we get a lot of people just flipping around, and I think that accounts for that. But yeah, you still have to deal with, the hardest part for me, and it's a plus and minus, is our audience is so big in Alabama that you have to be aware, as I'm sure you found out in the middle of the summer, this show does not revolve only around the axis of Birmingham and Tuscaloosa. I think our audience is very broad and diverse, and occasionally they'll be willing to listen to somebody else's opinion. Not often though.
So do you miss getting to do the old Paul Feinbaum show, which is like just let people come and scream at each other, and like you don't do as much of that? You've got to like have the coaches on, and I'm sure the SEC in some ways wants to keep you in a more straight and narrow path. Do you ever miss the old days, or is the check so big, Paul, that it doesn't matter? You're like, I got to do
Matt,
it. It's great.
I just can't believe that you of all people would suggest that there's interference with this show. I've got a free Matt Jones sweatshirt too. Don't misunderstand me. No, listen, I love working at ESPN because it does open the door to so many things that were not previously there. And it is great to have coaches from all over the country on in any sport. But, yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about the way it used to be. But I'm not a romantic about the show from 10 or 15 years ago. I really like where it is. I know that sounds like a company answer. There's no question that you balance what you sign up for. It's not like anybody made me do this job.
Yeah. Well, I remember one day I was hosting for you all, and they said, okay, you're going to have Manny Diaz, the coach of Miami, on. And I had absolutely no idea what to say to him. I knew nothing about Manny Diaz, but that also shows how versatile you are at it. Well, let me switch to college football in specific, because I don't think there's anybody outside of the people who are going to make these decisions that knows more about where we're headed or where we might be headed than you. So let me start with this. On, you know, this is June the, what, 9th? Do you think we start college football on time?
I do. And I think we do because the people that run college football are so determined to get it off the ground. And you know, you've watched the same shift that we've all seen from maybe in early April to season in jeopardy to who knows what it's going to look like to, hey, we're playing. I think, to use a Wall Street phrase, I think it is too big to fail. And you have many elements there, but I think we'll start on time. I think it's going to be an incredibly strange season to watch because I think there will be interruptions, potential interruptions. I think there are going to be some school presidents that at some point say, you know what, I've had enough of this. Ultimately, I think we'll see it unfold. And I do have some questions though, and I really do wonder what's going to happen when certain places do not handle the virus well.
Well, let's talk about what are some of those questions. I mean, for me, one of the questions is, what do you do when a player gets it? And maybe a bigger, because that's going to happen. I mean, it's already happened in some of these places. But more importantly, what do you do when a player gets it and gets really sick? Because that's probably going to happen somewhere too.
Yeah, I don't know. Because, I love everyone talking about protocol. And this is how we're doing it right now. I mean, nothing's happened yet. These are voluntary workouts. You can wink and a nod on that, but that's really all we have right now. And I think this is a dry run, Matt, to see, how do you do it? But the big moment is going to come when there is fear out there. And I think that's going to be the subset of the fall is, how will certain schools handle it? And I think ultimately for all the athletic directors who have spoken out and all the college coaches, the presidents are going to rule because they have the ultimate responsibility of what happens on that campus. And, you and I both know a number of them and they care about the financial money from athletics and they're all in, but they're also, ultimately responsible for life and death on that campus. And I think most of the ones I know are going to react intelligently versus, from a standpoint of, well, this is going to hurt the football program.
Do you get a sense that let's just take the SEC in particular, that the conference will make unified decisions? And what I mean by that is, let's just take the issue of how many people are going to be in the stands. I think if Alabama and the Alabama governor were to make that decision independently, they would reach a different decision than Kentucky and the Kentucky governor would reach. Do you think the conference will come to those decisions collectively, or will they allow universities their own leeway on such things?
I think for the most part, they'll try to move in concert with each other. And, you've heard every commissioner say the first call of the morning is the Zoom call with the other conference commissioners. So I think that will last, but I think within the conferences, you're going to see outliers. I mean, we already heard the warning from the Michigan president. There are other ones out there. I don't think you can control that, but I think the conferences are all going to try to get started. Now, the one thing we don't know, as you mentioned, we're in the second week of June. My concern is that too many people just act like this virus is over. It's not. And, you see the same numbers I do. And I don't know what's going to happen in 2 months. I mean, you have to presume it's going to be a lot better, but you also have to wonder, why it's going to be better considering everyone's out and about again.
Yeah, I saw a thing in the New York Times this morning that said they interviewed 500 epidemiologists and they asked them, how long would it take you to do X, go to a restaurant, go to church, blah, blah, blah. And the question of go to a sporting event, which, by the way, of the 20 things they asked was the thing the epidemiologist said they'd go to last. Right. Only 6% of the 500 said they would go to a game this fall. That's that was very striking to me. I mean, I don't think most fans feel that way, but presumably some decision makers will talk to people who feel this way. What do you think that means?
Yeah, I think it means that people forget what people say on your show and mine. A lot of people are very concerned, and they should be. I mean, I haven't gone very many places, but when I walk in someplace wearing a mask, I look around and go, why am I the only one with a mask? And you know, that's a whole nother issue. But I don't know. I mean, last fall, Matt, I was gone 5 nights a week to New York, to SEC town, to Connecticut. Like, I don't know if I'm going anywhere this fall. Do you? I mean, it's hard to predict.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's okay. So I was in Kentucky for most of this time, and then I've been in New York these last couple of weeks with my girlfriend. And just the difference in culture in these two places. In Kentucky, go to a store, maybe one or two people have a mask on. In New York, you go on the street and most people have a mask.
Right.
And in stores, everyone has a mask. I wonder how you can have a uniform set of guidelines for a country that is still way apart from each other on some of these social things.
And at the end of this conversation, what I hear every day and what you hear is the undertones of politics, that this isn't so much about safety or just being arrogant. It's about, you know, what political ideology do you subscribe to? And most people are getting their information from wherever they subscribe. And that, I mean, I hear the talking points as you do every single day on the program. I think this is going to get worse, because the closer we get to the first Tuesday in November, the more heated it will get.
Yeah, and you know, college football, let's be real. I mean, people can say stick to sports all they want, but college football is a big part of that. I mean, you know, the president's gone to a number of college football games.
Sure.
I think because he knows that, especially in the SEC, that's a base for him. And I think he knows that's the one sporting event he can go to and get cheered. And so I do think that's going to play a part of it. Let me switch then to sort of the protests that have been going on. Pro football, Roger Goodell seemed to suggest a switch in how the NFL is going to look at it. Do you think there will be SEC football players that, for instance, will kneel during the national anthem or will do some sort of protest? We didn't really see that 3 years ago. Do you think we'll see it now?
Yeah, I think it depends on the individual schools on how they do it. A couple of years ago, we went down this road, and a lot of schools do not bring their teams out. The ones that do, and I really don't know offhand, I think you will see it. You think you've seen everything in this country, and growing up as a teenager in the early 70s, as a kid in the 60s, I've had a decent view of the civil rights struggle, especially living in the South. But what's happened lately has been extraordinary. And I really like what I'm seeing in reaction to the athletes speaking out. They have a power they've never enjoyed before. I think it's a matter of whether, where does the resistance come? And I know right now everyone is saying the right things, but we're not into the season yet, but I do think it's going to be a big part of it. I think the coaches are somewhat awkwardly trying to do whatever they can to look good. But Matt, how do they really feel is the question.
Well, I that's my question. Let's talk about the awkward coaches. So in Lexington, Mark Stoops last Friday got his entire team in downtown, and they all wore Black Lives Matter shirts and marched down the road, including him. I mean, I got to tell you, Paul, I thought that was a pretty gutsy thing for Mark Stoops to do in Kentucky. But even though it was gutsy in Kentucky, it would be even gutsier to do it in Alabama, Mississippi, whatever. Then you have Dabo Swinney, who I don't know what he does exactly, from wearing that weird Football Matter shirt to his 14-minute video. What do you think of those, what I would call almost the two extreme reactions? And then where is someone like Nick Saban or Gus Malzahn on that continuum?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone has done what they have to do. I was really struck last night. I was talking to Sam Pittman, the Arkansas coach. And he said, I went to a Black Lives Matter protest last week, and it was the first time anybody had heard him say it, because he does not look like a guy that really feels comfortable talking about things other than college football. By the way, and that's most college coaches, okay? That's not just one. And I don't know where Saban is. I mean, Malzahn's already been seen with players. I think Saban has, you know, is tiptoeing around this, so to speak. I mean, yeah, he issued a statement, but I'm not sure he really knows what to do. Although his past would indicate to me that he wouldn't be afraid of doing it. He has been, I think he's been, for a college football coach, I think he's been way out in front over his career.
What about Dabo? I mean, I let me just say, as a starting point, I've always kind of thought he was a cheese ball. I always hate when he takes the sort, because he's clearly a very smart guy. And when he takes the dumb, like, I've never even seen this before, like he does that every time he doesn't want to talk about something, I always sort of mock it, because I find him to be – I don't find him to be a fraud, but I find him to be a little phony. And it feels like he has handled this really weird and strange. What's your take on how he's navigated these waters?
I have had more trouble with this issue. Last night I went on ESPN right after the statement was released. And again, I in all candor, I saw a couple of snippets. I mean, I was doing a show, so – I couldn't watch all 14 minutes, and I gave a very visceral reaction to it. It made me angry that it seemed like he was trying to pull something over. And then I watched the whole thing, and I don't know if I was just numb by the end of it, Matt, but I came away thinking that he was trying to do the right thing, as crazy as that sounds. In some ways, I think he was just trying to protect his coach. And I know that coach, and I don't know him well enough to even offer an opinion, because I wasn't there and you weren't either. And, you know, Dabo's explanation, you know, left a lot to be desired. But I didn't think there was malice in it. I think he was just trying to you know, conflate a situation that probably happens on a lot of practice fields that we're only now beginning to hear about.
Well, that's eye-opening to me. I mean, I don't know about you. Maybe it's not eye-opening to you, but in a week we found out Utah defensive coordinator, Iowa strength coach, Clemson coach. That feels like a lot to say the N-word, which I thought everyone had agreed a long time ago was like just a no-go. We've had three come out in a few days.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, that I was originally stunned when I heard about this, but maybe I shouldn't have been. And I think when you live in the South, and this is maybe an eye-opening moment for me as well. You hear things, and in the past you just haven't reacted. I mean, I'm no better than anyone else. I've been accused of everything. I mean, I've given, you know, insensitive takes on things, because that's what you do. I mean, you do it all the time. But I know how I was brought up, and I know how you were brought up. I'm questioning myself now about things that maybe I should have done more. You know, when I've heard this around me, you know, what should I have done as a younger person? I mean, I know now there's no conversation here, but. Yeah, I mean, I never liked hearing it because I was taught it was an abhorrent phrase and to never use it. And I can, you know, thankfully say I never have. Living in the South, I don't know how many people can make that claim. But you're right. Back to Dabo, and I got about as sidetracked as talking to you as I did watching it. He just beats to his own drummer, and the atmosphere on Clemson is utterly bizarre. But he keeps attracting great players.
Yeah, it's strange. I guess I just felt like if these sort of most blatant things have come out, imagine what else is going on that's not as blatant, though that still is problematic. But I guess my question is, where does it go next? I mean, do you think when football starts, everything just goes to the side because we all care about football so much? Or is this going to continue to go through the season? And then similarly on the COVID stuff, how many people are going to be in the stands, do you think? You think there's going to be 10,000, 50,000, 100,000? What do you think?
I think on the player social conversation, I think it's going to keep going. You know what's going to happen with the NFL. I mean, that's a fait accompli. And I think players are going to continue to speak out. And you're going to it may not be every day, may not be every week, but you're going to get players who are reacting. On COVID, I think it's a story that will be different everywhere. You'll get just like we've seen in certain places in the country where. You know, whether it's a church, whether it's a racetrack, people are going to defy local and state government. And the governor of Texas said the other day that he wants 50% occupancy in stadiums. I don't know. There's no way to do that based on everybody that I talk to and you talk to. But somebody's going to try it.
Do you think that'll be a local decision? I mean, do you think the SEC will say, okay, every state – if Texas lets you do 50% A&M, you can do that? Or do you think they'll say, let's just make a conference-wide rule?
I don't think my gut feeling is the conference is not going to try to legislate that. Okay. I think that really is going to come down to where you live and what's acceptable there.
Do you think this will be – I mean, this is going to be a weird season. But, like, let me just give an example for Kentucky. Kentucky plays at Auburn this year. Normally you'd look at that game and go, well, Kentucky's not winning that game. I mean, they're playing on the road at Auburn. But it won't be the same at Auburn this year. You know, it's not going to be the same environment. Is this a year that you win games like that that normally you couldn't have?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fact that a home – I mean, Vegas doesn't give home field, you know, 3 to 7 points for nothing. You're not going to be able to have that. So I think, you know, a lot of those games that can, I mean, and by the way, is there a team that plays more of those games every year than Kentucky, where whether it's Kentucky, South Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee, Kentucky, Mississippi, that you just never know. I mean, it's going to come down to the final possession. I think it could aid a team on the road more than it's ever before. Cause I mean, normally Auburn is, I would say Auburn's among the most difficult places in the country to win. And, you know, if there are 25,000 people there, it's not going to make any difference.
Let's talk about Kentucky for a second. Kentucky football fans get very frustrated because they feel like they still don't really get respect after now having gone to 4 straight bowl games, a 10-win season, you know. And there is a part of me that every time I see a preseason ranking, it feels like they never take into account the last few years. After what they did last year, where they win with Lynn Bowden running every time, do you feel like Mark Stoops and Kentucky are still underappreciated conference and nationwide?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I can't tell you how many days, Matt, I've walked into our show in June, July, August, and I look down and there's 2 calls before the show even starts, and they, you know, you have the name of the person, Frankfort, Kentucky, Harlan, Kentucky, and the tagline, how come Kentucky doesn't get any respect? it's automatic. And I just think sometimes, you know, Mark Stoops is a relatively quiet coach. People in the industry respect him. You know how I feel about him. I was kind of on the Mark Stoops train before it was cool. Never forget, whatever year it was, you could tell me sitting out there on a cold, blustery day in Lexington asking you, how big a game is this for Mark Stoops tomorrow against Mississippi State? You said, if he loses this game, I think he could get run out of here. And everyone agreed with you. That's how far the program has come. But I think Kentucky will probably have to continue to do more. And I hate to even say that. It sounds like I'm hating. I'm not. I was there 2 years ago for that epic November game against Florida against Georgia. Kentucky football was the center of the universe that morning. And it was cool. But they didn't win. And I think Kentucky's eventually going to have to knock that door down before people stop and go, you know what, maybe we should give them a little more respect.
Yeah, I mean, I don't expect people to put them in the conversation with Alabama, Georgia, LSU, because they don't deserve that. I just don't understand how every single year people still pick South Carolina, Missouri, and Mississippi State to beat Kentucky.
Yeah,
when Kentucky wins those games most of the time now.
It's almost like you just get used to things. And people do not change their opinions easily. On the other hand, I mean, why is Kentucky always number one in basketball, Matt? I mean, it's just, it's almost the reverse.
We earn that. Well, we win the conference almost every year or come in second.
No, but I'm talking about, you know, nationally. It's just,
yeah,
it's like, you know, when you start doing the, you know, if you get, say, okay, who do you like this year in basketball? Kentucky. It's almost the exact opposite in basketball as it is in football. And I don't think right now, I mean, my advice to Kentucky fans is, you know, quit being angry. I don't say that disrespectfully. You've earned enough respect that you don't have to ask for it.
Well, I actually think that's fair enough. You know, it's interesting. You go back to that Mississippi State game. It goes to show you how the margin between success and failure kind of at the periphery like that can be so thin. Austin McGinnis has a 48-yard kick to end the game.
Right.
He makes it. If he misses it, Mark Stoops might have been fired. He makes it, and 2 years later they win 10 games. Do you think that happens a lot, that like a little thing here and there where there's a lot of randomness can be the difference between success and failure for a coach or a program?
It can be that narrow, and it also something that Mark Stoops had that a lot of people don't have, and that's two intelligent, thoughtful, reasonable bosses. And what I mean by that is I'm talking about Mitch Barnhart and the president, Eli Capiluta, who I've known since my Birmingham days. And I think he had two people in you know, behind him, and they didn't stick with him like other schools like South Carolina stuck with Muschamp because of money. They believed in him because they saw what he was doing, and they saw how that program had been built up, and all the extraneous things that the fans don't see but do matter, the facilities. So I think it's a combination of that. Yeah, but had he lost that game, I'm not even sure the two people I just mentioned could have saved him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they ended up then upsetting Louisville, but I'm not sure if they upset Louisville if they had lost that game to Mississippi State. Well, before I let you go, let's just talk a little bit about the sport of college football in general. Now that name likeness is likely going to be something that happens where kids can own their likeness and they can make money from it, I tend to think about it more on the basketball side because I think there will be more opportunities for more players in basketball because people at the schools like Kentucky know those guys. Talk to me about how you think it happens in football. How many guys on Alabama's roster will have endorsement deals?
I think it'll be pretty narrow. You know, basketball is a little easier, I think, to figure out. But football, I think it will be very random. It will be the, you know, one or two big names. And I think that's going to be it. I think some, you know, you may see some like gymnastics or, you know, somebody from other sports who are able to capitalize on it. But I mean, football is about a handful of players. With all due respect, I don't see the offensive line getting a lot of endorsement deals, do you?
No, and I agree with you. I actually think women's sports, some of those players will have real opportunity. Gymnastics is a great call. Women's basketball, women's softball. I actually think that there's a lot of those players that can make some money. Do you think coaches are scared of it?
I think coaches are scared of pretty much anything that infringes on their absolute authority. So, yes. I mean, that's why, you know, I mean, even for somebody that has seen all that I've seen and, you know, to get to my age, I mean, I'm all for young people taking over. I mean, I was a rebel at heart in high school and college, and that hasn't changed over these many, many years. And I think college coaches have ruled programs like tyrants for too long. And that's why I think the NIL situation is so great. And I think even greater is the voice being heard right now in the social justice conversation.
Last question. Who for people like me who are going to have to start preparing for college football season nationally, Paul Feinbaum, who are the early favorites in your mind to play for the championship?
Yeah, whenever I say what I'm about to say, people just go, oh, yeah, right. But I do believe Alabama is going to be the best team from the SEC.
Even with Mac Jones as the quarterback?
Yeah, even with Mac Jones, because they are so good everywhere else. And on top of that, the backup quarterback is only the number one high school player in the country last year, Bryce Young, coming from California. And, you know, he missing spring hurts him a little bit, but they are loaded. Schedule is favorable to a degree. I mean, they do go to Baton Rouge, but they have Auburn at home and Georgia at home. So they're in pretty good shape. I think beyond that, it's the usual suspects. I think nationally, it's Ohio State and Clemson, and maybe another SEC team, maybe not. But I don't think a whole lot has changed in college football.
So my listeners will get mad at me if I don't ask, do you think I'll ever get to come on your show again and we reunite on that one, on those wonderful airwaves?
Yeah, well, what I'm about to say is off the record, so don't quote me on this. But I think the host of this podcast, Matt Jones, knows how I feel about him being on our show. He's one of the most popular guests. And as crazy as this next statement will be, I'm not even sure why you're no longer on this show, you're not. And you might offer more than I can, because I sometimes when I realize you can't come on the show, I really don't even know why.
I don't know why either. I mean, I know what it was like 2 or 3 years ago, but that feels like a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I don't really get it.
Nobody in the history of the show has ever gotten in more trouble than you on our program. I don't know how many times you've been sent to timeout, but
the other thing I don't know is who even decides. Like I sat with Greg Sankey at the SEC tournament, and he came on my show for like 30 minutes and talked about canceling terms. Great. And that's right. Did I say Greg Sankey or Mike Slide? What did I say? Paul,
I think if you go back to the Wizard of Oz, I think there's a wizard behind the curtain who just doesn't like it.
Well, let me know who it is. It is what it is. But
we need more T-shirts. So, trying to get Matt Jones back on the Feinbaum show.
It's hard. I will say this: it's harder to get back on the Feinbaum show than to get over my fights with Mitch McConnell. That was an easier fight than actually the Paul Feinbaum fight is, oddly.
Yeah, I mean, I think, by the way, I think Mitch McConnell is allowed on the show, and you're not.
That's unfortunate. Well, seriously, I've said this to you privately, I'll say it publicly. Everything I've done in terms of the radio side, you've been a great sort of mentor, and also you've always been kind and considerate and given me opportunities when you're allowed to. And I just want to thank you, and I appreciate you taking the time today.
Matt, it was my pleasure. And free Matt Jones.
There you go.